places to buy bottled water, and I would dutifully go there every day, every other day, and buy enough bottled water to get us through the day, and I would schlep it up the hill to the top of the hill where our hotel was, and that's what we did. And so I'm not here to say that there's no place for bottled water. Absolutely, there is a place for bottled water, and you know, this is what we did. And it's kind of interesting too, because you know, when we bought this bottled water, we never questioned whether or not that bottled water was going to be safe or not. We just assumed tap water is not safe, bottled water is safe. We bought it, we used it. We never had a second thought about whether it's safe or not. And I think that's one of the things that I think that there's kind of an allure about bottled water, and the fact that it's in a bottle, it's been sealed, it must be safe. And I think that's something that we take for granted. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't take that for granted, but maybe it's not, maybe it's worth questioning just a little bit. That's maybe one of the things, the themes that I hope to get out of this session here. I brought this as a prop. This is the other extreme of my bottled water experience. I bought this shortly before coming on staff a bunch of years ago. This is a bottle that I've had, a reusable bottle that I've had with me hiking on hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of hiking with that bottle. It's been with me for over half my life now. So I can attest to both sides of the bottled water debate here. I have my reusable water bottle that I use everywhere all the time, but I've also had occasion to use bottled water when it seemed like it was necessary to do so. So let me get that out of the way here first of all, and we'll go from there. So let me tell you, read to you some description, some advertisement about some amazing water. I don't know if you've heard about this water before. But after many years of research and conscious deliberation, Dr. Emoto is able to provide the world with a stable, consumable, hexagonal water imprinted with frequencies to support creativity, balance, and conscious awareness. There is no question that hexagonally structured water provides more rapid hydration. Dr. Emoto's hexagonal water is more easily assimilated at the cellular level. It may be one of the best ways to overcome dehydration and protect your body from the symptoms of disease and premature aging. Within minutes, Dr. Emoto's water moves into the cells, taking nutrients and expelling metabolic wastes more efficiently than bottled water. And another one here. Using a combination of scalar wave energy, laser light, inert noble gases, and frequency-emitting crystalline ceramic oscillators, Dr. Emoto's water is hexagonally structured and imprinted with specific frequencies which are designed to stimulate and encourage mental coherence, symmetry, and balance, the qualities necessary for optimal functioning in a complex world. And it only costs about $120 a liter for this special water, and it sounds worth it, doesn't it? So here's another one about Penta, because hexagonal, I guess, isn't good enough, so Penta is better. Penta has been reduced to its purest state in nature, smaller clusters of water molecules. These smaller clusters move through your body more quickly than other water, penetrating your cell membranes more easily. This means Penta is absorbed into your system faster and more completely. When you drink Penta, you're drinking the essence of water. You get hydrated faster, more efficiently, and more completely than with any other water on Earth. Have you guys seen any of these kind of ads before? Clustered water? You know, there's some sort of amazing claims that are made about water and the benefits of bottled water. And like I said, they're able to sell this stuff for about $120 a liter. It's amazing. And so, first of all, I just want to show you that water is truly amazing. There's no question about it. But it has nothing to do with Dr. Emoto or any crystals or anything that anybody can do. So I have a few slides here to kind of, get in the obligatory chemistry in this talk. This is the periodic table, and one of the things that sucked me into chemistry about as much as anything else is this periodic table here. It's an amazing piece of work, and you know, the physics has been looking for their grand unifying theory for decades and decades and decades. This is the grand unifying theory for chemistry. And what's, I mean, among the many different amazing things about this periodic table, which is really cool, is that if you go up and down any one of these columns here on the table, all those elements are slightly different based on their molecular weight, but they all have similar chemistry. They all have a very similar electron configuration. So the chemistry of all of these compounds in this blue column should be kind of the same. Everything in this red column should be kind of the same. Everything up and down this column should be the same. So if you go and look at the column that oxygen is in here, along with sulfur, selenium, and tellurium, all the chemistries of those four compounds ought to be pretty similar. And so this is a plot here of the molecular weight of the dihydrogen version of these things. So water, dihydrogen sulfide, dihydrogen selenide, and dihydrogen telluride. And it's a plot of molecular weight, and this is something that you frequently do in chemistry, is you try to look at the tendencies of things based on their molecular weight. So the molecular weight of dihydrogen telluride here, dihydrogen selenide here, dihydrogen sulfide here. And so this particular plot has got boiling points and freezing points. So this is the freezing point for these three compounds here. This is the boiling point for these three compounds right here. And based on this plot, based on the fact that these things should all have similar chemistry, if you just extrapolate down the line, this is where the freezing point of water should be at minus 80 degrees C. This is where the boiling point of water should be at around minus 65 degrees C. That's what's predicted. And if that was the case, we would not have life on this planet, if that's really where these things were. So this is where the boiling point and the freezing point of water actually are. As you know, up at 100 degrees C is the boiling point, at 0 degrees C is the freezing point. So yes, water is amazing because it does not fit this pattern of boiling points and freezing points as its compatriots in that particular column of the periodic table. And if it did, and because it doesn't fit, because it has these high boiling points, high freezing points here, we are able to have life on this planet. So that in itself is amazing enough without anything else that Dr. Emoto can do to water. Some of the other things about water that are amazing, the heat capacity, this is how much heat each gram of water can hold. It's the highest of all solids and liquids. The heat of fusion, highest except for ammonia. Heat of vaporization, highest of all substances. Surface tension, highest of all substances. Dielectric constants, highest of all substances. It is truly amazing stuff. It really is. And without all these properties, all these wonderful properties of water, the fact that you have to put so much energy in them to get it to change states, the fact that it acts sort of as a buffer. It's an energy buffer, and it allows it, you know, it's just at the right temperatures for life to exist. So it's truly amazing stuff, but it's all natural, and there's nothing that can be done by anybody else to change it. The reason why it's such an amazing molecule here is because the oxygen itself has got a high enough density in it that it basically pulls these electrons away from the hydrogen. So the hydrogen comes with its own set of its own electron here, but oxygen essentially sucks the electron away from these, and you end up with this polar molecule. So the hydrogen end of the molecule here has got a positive charge. The oxygen end of the molecule has got a negative charge, and because of this positive and negative charge, it essentially you can start lining things up. You end up with something called hydrogen bonding, where the hydrogen part of one water molecule will line itself up with the negative end of the oxygen on the other molecules. And because of this organization, because of this structure, that makes it not fit the same properties as the other molecules in that column of the periodic table. So here's the hexagonal part of the talk. This is what truly hexagonal water is. This is ice. And when ice is formed, you can see here, so here's a water molecule, you've got this hydrogen lined up with the oxygen, that hydrogen lined up with that oxygen here. Ice actually forms a hexagonal crystal, and its structure is like this. What's kind of interesting is that in water, you actually have sort of a hybrid. You still have some of these hexagonal structures in there, just like ice, but then you also have some free-floating molecules in there. And what's kind of interesting is that when you heat up ice and melt it, you're only breaking about 15% of these bonds, of these hydrogen or these hydroxyl bonds within the ice structure. That means like when water at 0 degrees has still got 85% of it is still like roughly ice structure. But at that point, there's enough bonds that have been broken that you still have that you have a fluid. So this kind of gives you an idea. These are all in degrees centigrade here. It kind of gives you an idea that as you transition from ice to warmer and warmer, you start to break more and more of these hexagonal structures in the water. The other thing that's truly amazing about water here is the fact that its highest density is at 4 degrees C, not ice itself. And so, if it didn't have that property here, lakes would freeze from the bottom up, not the bottom or the top down. Because the ice floats on the water, that's why you form ice there. And again, this is another one of those things where if you didn't have those properties in place, life would be pretty challenging on this planet here. So there are many, many amazing things about water, and I would like for you guys to appreciate water for its amazing things, but it has nothing to do with Dr. Emoto. So, clusters, yes. Hexagonal, yes. But no thanks to Dr. Emoto. Okay, so that's really all I have on slides. I just wanted to show those kinds of things. All right, we'll just let that grind through and see what happens. Sure. Okay, so let me... Let me see if I can master this for a while.
You gotta pull it all the way down. Here.
All the way down?
Give it a little boost and it'll go up.
Alright. Okay.
Do you want the projector on?
Yeah, the projector, that'd be good too. So, I guess what I would like to start here, because it's rather arbitrary, is just to pick your brains and on bottled water. It's so dark in here all the time, isn't it? So let's start with. What are your perceptions or expectations of bottled water? When you pick it up,
ease of use. It makes life easier.
I ask my students, why do they, those that drink bottled water, why do they? And of course, I use clickers and multiple choice, and I give them safer than tap.
Mm-hmm.
Better tasting, and both and other.
Uh-huh.
And they're fairly split between taste and safety.
Okay.
The perception of safety.
Do you probe them a little bit more on the safety part of thing? Why do they think in particular that it's more safe? Where does that information come from? Where does that perception come from?
It's an assumption because it's sealed, as you said. But then I generally follow up and say, it's less regulated than tap water. And if you leave it out in the car, you're going to be drinking a lot of the phthalates and other good things.
I should just invite you up here and you can sort of, we can go tag team on this. That would be awesome. Okay, any other things about your expectations when you pick up a bottle of water?
I just wanted to comment on his statement about the assumption of safety. I, too, had been in Russia. This was about 15 years ago, and when we were in Moscow, we went to a restaurant. And a person traveling with our tour group advised us not to drink out of the bottled water at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because you take it to the kitchen and fill it up from the tap.
Okay.
As Americans, we're sitting there looking at this bottle of water thinking it's very safe. So assumption is a huge factor. Whether you buy it at the store, you get it on the table.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting thing too. I mean, I know there have been definitely cases where unscrupulous people have taken bottled water containers out of the garbage, filled them with water, and sold them. And so yes, there is sort of this, I think, very strong. There's this very strong pull to that concept of being sealed somehow, which is an interesting one to explore. Any other reasons why anybody or any other assumptions that you have about bottled water when you buy it? Yeah.
Well, I look sometimes for spring water, thinking, oh, spring water has got to be better.
Uh huh. Okay, so probably, I guess maybe to generalize this one, we could call better sources. All right, anything else? Any other assumptions that you have?
That's kind of the same ad as the Coors Beer ad made with Rocky Mountain Spring Water. It's kind of the same advertisement.
Right. Okay, so... where would you guess then that glacier, mountain, natural spring water is from? It is from New Jersey. This one is from New
Jersey. Are there any glaciers in New Jersey?
Not for a long time. So, you know, this must be ancient, ancient water. Well, here's another one that's kind of interesting. How about this one? Alaska Premium Glacier. I need to pick on you guys first. Where do you think this water is from?
Not Alaska, it'd be too expensive.
Any other ideas?
Florida.
Florida. No, it actually is from Alaska. It is from Juneau. The Juneau Municipal Water Pipe. 111241. That's where the glacier water from Alaska comes from, is the municipal water supply. And I don't know, I've seen various estimates on the source of water, but some anywhere between like 40-70% is what I've seen of the water in bottled water actually comes from a tap water supply. And a lot of times they will they'll do some filtration on it, or they'll add back some minerals to get some taste or something like that too. But most of the time, you know, at least half the time when you're buying bottled water, it's not coming from where you think it is. And it's probably just coming from the municipal tap water. And so, I mean, if that's one of the things I think I should take away from this session here tonight, is that if the bottled water companies trust municipal tap water, then why shouldn't you? I'll start with that particular statement here. Another thing that's kind of interesting about the whole concept of the names is that you have to really look carefully. If you want spring water, you need to look at the label carefully and actually make sure that it really is coming from a spring, because there's a very, you know, obviously they can use a brand and they can say, well, this is just the brand name. It doesn't say where it's coming from. And so there's a lot of brands out there that will say spring, have some sort of spring in the title, but they're not actually coming from a spring at all. And so they are required to have labels on there if it's coming from a spring, but if it doesn't specifically say that it's coming from a spring, you probably can't assume that it is. Let's see. What else?
Can you tell us where that's coming from?
The Fiji water actually does come from Fiji. And it's an interesting thing early on. I don't have the exact, well, maybe I do. I was going to say I don't have the exact advertisement that Fiji bottled water ran, but maybe I do have it here in the book. There's a book that I've been spending a bit of time with called Bottled and Sold. It's by Peter Gleick, and it seems to have a pretty good record of the water, of bottled water and a lot of the issues around it. I'm trying to think here if I can find the right Fiji Water had this amazing ad early on in their campaign.
But isn't it a major part of their economy?
Probably so, yeah. But the fact that they ship it all the way around the world is kind of interesting. So there was an ad that they ran. It said, the label says Fiji because it's not bottled in Cleveland.
Yeah.
So they ran that particular ad, and then, I mean, that's their only reference to Cleveland. But Cleveland took offense by that because, you know, Cleveland, if you remember, if you're, I don't know if you're aware of it, but the Clean Water Act that was passed in 1972 was largely put in, the impetus to get the Clean Water Act to pass was when the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland lit on fire because of all the pollution. And so Cleveland had a reputation for bad water, plus Lake Erie water was pretty bad. It had been pretty polluted as well. So Fiji decided to pick on Cleveland. Cleveland wasn't very happy about that, and so they actually went back and tested the water and to find out if the Fiji water really was better than the municipal water from Cleveland. Let's see if I can dig this one up. As we go into the dead calm, the dead silence for a bit. Okay, well, I'm not exactly finding it right off the bat. Anyway, the gist of it was that the Fiji water had higher levels of arsenic in them than the Cleveland water. In fact, waters that wouldn't have passed muster here in the United States. And so the water, what was coming out of these Fiji water bottles was worse than the water that was coming out of Cleveland. So they did the tests, they did the counterattack, and this Fiji ad was listed as like one of the top 10 or 20 worst ads of the, I don't know if it was the decade or the year or something like that. But, you know, they picked on the wrong city, and because the water quality wasn't all that good. So ease of use, safety. Well, okay, so let's just pick on some of these things here. Taste. There's a lot of folks who routinely say that they like bottled water because of the taste. And so municipal water folks have put this to the test time and time again where they do taste tests. They do blind tests where they line up bottled water, and they line up municipal water, and they ask people to taste the water pick the waters that they think are best. And it's sometimes it's bottled water, and sometimes it's municipal water, sometimes it's tap water. It's a very ambiguous thing. And I think that, you know, maybe there's a brand of water that people genuinely do like best, but I think they have a hard time picking it out of a lineup. And so there's this perception that bottled water tastes better, but it may or may not be true. Some people might be perceptive enough to pick out the differences, but most people aren't. Safety. The safety issue is ambiguous, from what I can tell. It may be safer, or it may not be safer, to drink bottled water than to tap water. The problem is that it's so poorly regulated and that it's so poorly reported that we really don't know. We just don't. And one of the examples is for coliform. Bacteria. For a municipal water supply, if it's over 2.5 million. If there's a municipal water supply that's supplying over 2.5 million consumers, they literally have to test for coliform bacteria 14 times per day. If it's under 50,000, they're still checking 2 times per day. If it's under 1,000, it's about 1 time per quarter. If they come up with any kind of a violation of any of these things, if it tests positive, well, first of all, they're testing for total coliform. If they get a positive for total coliform, then they have to test specifically for E. coli, because E. coli is the dangerous one. If they get a positive test, they have to report within 24 hours. And so, you know, you'll get notices, boil water notices from municipal water supply companies if they find this coliform bacteria in your water supply. The bottled water, on the other hand, is only tested one time per week. And there's no mandatory reporting involved. They don't have to report. And it has to do with which regulatory agency is in charge of these things. The municipal water supply comes under the EPA. So the EPA is the one, I guess, who's putting in place all of these regulations for handling the municipal water supply. The bottled water, for whatever reason here, is not considered to be, it's not a municipal supply of water. So bottled water actually is considered a food, and so it comes under the Food and Drug Administration. But it's even more complicated than that. The Food and Drug Administration doesn't cover it unless it crosses state lines. And so bottled water that's bottled in a state and sold within the state basically is almost completely unregulated. Well, it could be completely unregulated if the state itself does not have any standards in place. And there's about 11 states, I think, in the country that have no bottled water standards at all. And so water that's bottled and sold within those states is basically unregulated. And the only thing that's really keeping you safe is bad publicity if something goes wrong. So, along with that, whereas this in the municipal water supplies, whereas you have to report this within 24 hours and they'll issue a boiled water kind of alert.
That's true of every state?
What's that?
Is that true of every state?
This one?
Yes.
If it's under the EPA, yes. Yes, well, that's a federal standard that would happen. So the under the food, let's see, where was I going? Oh, just on recall. So really, the under the Food and Drug Administration, recalls and water safety thing are driven more by just marketing stuff, you know, where if it's dangerous, they know it will cut into their market, they'll recall it because of that. Because if they let something go out and there's lots of illness or deaths that come from it, that's bad for business. So it's really the business practices and the ability to make money that keeps them on their toes and makes them do these recalls. But since they don't have to report, a lot of these recalls don't even happen until months after the problem first came up. And so I had a list of some of the different things that have caused bottled water recalls. Mold, sodium hydroxide, kerosene, styrene, algae, yeast, tetrahydrofuran, sand, fecal coliforms, chlorine, glass particles, sanitizer, crickets, and benzene are all different things that have come on the list for why bottled water has been recalled. Yeah?
That's municipal stuff. What about what's the regulation for the people who live in the country and have their own wells?
For your own wells, I presume that you're on your own. I think it's not considered a municipal water supply until there's like 20 to 25 people that are getting water over a certain time span of the year.
So is that not regulated at all, or by the county, or by...
If it's an individual well, no, I would assume that it's not regulated. Okay. Unless somebody here knows better. I'm a water chemist first, not a policy person, so... Yeah, but as far as I know, it would be good. Yeah.
You know, this is a good example, and should answer that debate between the free market, managing to monitor itself versus the need for the federal government.
Right.
That's a classic example.
Yeah.
End of debate.
So which side of the debate are you falling on?
Pretty easy to figure out.
Yeah, okay.
I want the FAA guy sit next to me in the airplane.
Right. Yeah. So the answer, I mean, just in terms of safety, again, it may be safer to drink bottled water because, you know, they're using the same standard practices for the most part that they're using for doing Pepsi Cola. I mean, you know, or Coca-Cola or any of those sodas, any kind of the bottled sodas. I mean, I think they're pretty much going to fall under the same set of regulations that the Food and Drug does. So, I mean, if you trust your soda bottle, you know, coming from Coke, coming from Pepsi, then you'll probably have, you know, reasonably good good reason to trust the bottled water that's coming out of those same corporations, because they're going to be following the same standards. You know, so I don't know what to tell you about safety. It may be or may not be, but I think one of the things that should probably be worth noting here is the cost of that ambiguity. So, municipal water. I went digging online and it's somewhere on the order of 0.2 or like 0.2 cents to half a cent per gallon. I went and looked on Safeway just to see what a local brand of water from in our town goes for. Arrowhead Springs. Only some of which actually comes from Arrowhead Springs. Ranges from about $1.49 to $4.50 per gallon. So, you know, it could be anywhere from, see, I need to do higher math, 750 to over 2,000 times more expensive to buy that bottle of water for us than it is just to get it out of our tap. I guess if you use this number here, it's somewhere between 300 and 1,500 times more expensive to use bottled water. Just this kind of, you know, low-end, more generic brand. This doesn't even take into account the $120 a liter, which that's like $480 a liter of special hexagonal penta clustered water. Yeah.
You know, a lot of what's driving everybody's concern about bottled water or drinking bottled water has been started like, you know, like the groundwater contamination, whether it be nitrates, or in the case of Sacramento, we had Aerojet was contaminating the groundwater with, you know, or, you know, so, you know, what, but do, you're saying that most of this water is coming from the same source, so is there any evidence that maybe, you know, or the fractionating, you know, we've seen the fracking that's going on in the Midwest for the natural gas, mm-hmm. is contaminating the groundwater. Is bottled water maybe able to, if they're doing some sort of filtration or some other process that would remove those, or is that not even, it's just the same water and it's just that we're not, they're better, they're safer by drinking it?
By regulation, the municipal city water supply has got to supply you with water that meets all federal safety standards. And so, you know, if there's a problem with the groundwater and that introduces problems in the source waters, they have to deal with that. Okay. And so another thing that the municipal water supply is required to do is to send everybody a yearly report of their water quality, which is something that, you know, you can't hardly find what's in bottled water, the reports on bottled water. So, so what is it? Yeah, I think... trying to think if I had some of those different rates down. Bottled water once a year for chemical and physical contaminants, but they don't have to report to anybody about it. Yeah, municipals send out yearly reports to customers, and so we get that in our water. So I mean, that would be my answer to you, is that you know, it's, as the proponent of government regulation back there would attest to, you're getting much, much better testing, and probably better testing out of the municipal water supply than you do get out of the bottled water. And of course, there's a comment over there earlier about when you let bottled water stay in a car, you're getting things like phthalates. There was a big controversy about bisphenol A for a long time, that there were several water bottles that were leaching bisphenol A, which is a hormone disruptor. And that was a very unknown thing about whether this hormone disruptor would have possible harmful effects for humans. So that caused a big problem. They actually had to go back and try to devise water or bottles that didn't leach these things anymore. Comment back here.
The only time I buy bottled water is when I'm overseas, mm-hmm. and we're told not to drink the tap water because it's not good. But, I mean, it never occurred to me that maybe there'd be something wrong with the bottled water. Do you know anything about the regulation for bottled water? I mean, I know that we have to, you get bottles that have seals on them, mm-hmm. you know, but so I'm assuming that that's okay. I don't know.
I mean, it's probably better than that. I'm sure it's better than, well, I don't know if I'm sure or not. I don't know the answer to that. I think, I mean, every country would have its own set of standards for it.
In China, we drank the tap water, but we boiled it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, that probably meant we were drinking heavy metals, but that wouldn't kill us right away.
Well, I mean, and that's set up in the regulations. That's why, you know, that's why the municipal water has to test for things, the live things, like bacteria, you know, 2 to 14 times a day. Because the bacteria things can have instant and negative effects on you, whereas some of these metals and things like that, you know, there's more of a chronic problem. And it would definitely take a lot longer to have any impact. If you're just traveling overseas for a week or two and you're drinking that, it's really not that big a deal. Yeah?
I was reassured when I was traveling in France. I saw a sign in the hotel that said all water served in this hotel was passed by the manager. So I felt
that. Passed by the manager, huh? And what color was it? Oh my. Okay.
Carbonated water, same stuff. I mean, there's nothing different in the way they bottle that and carbonate it to make it safe or not.
Probably not. I guess. You know, I mean, the amount of acid that you've got, I'm not sure. I haven't looked into it, whether or not carbonation is strong enough, the acidic content is strong enough to protect you at all from any kind of bacterial stuff. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
What's that?
They drink beer.
Yeah, they drink beer, that's true. Yeah.
But where do they get the water?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Okay, so let's see, let's move on to some other kinds of topics here too. So that's kind of the water. So if you're happy to spend, you know, 300 to 2,500 or 2,000, over 2,000 times the cost for the bottled water because you think that it's safer, maybe that's something that needs to be rethought a little bit. But all I can say is that the regulation on it makes that a pretty ambiguous point. So I was kind of interested, the other aspect of the bottled water is not just the safety itself, but the environmental cost of bottled water.
Right.
And of course, this is, it's a little bit hard to get exact data on this kind of information. You can get some ranges is probably more likely. So I pulled up one paper that looked at the carbon footprint. Of bottled water versus tap water in an Italian city. Have the name handy of the Italian city right now. But in essence, I think that the gist of the study was that for every 1.5 liter of bottled water, there was emissions of about a third of a kilogram of CO2 released into the atmosphere. And so in the United States, the average per capita consumption of bottled water is about 105 liters. So the average person in the United States drinks 105 liters. So that means somewhere else in the country there must be somebody who's drinking 210 liters to account for me. So the average footprint of your average U.S. citizen would be 23 kilograms of CO2 per year. And if you multiply this time the entire population, that translates into about 7.4 billion. Kilograms per year in the U.S. of CO2. And if everybody in the U.S. stopped drinking bottled water here, that would be the equivalent of taking 1.43 million cars off the road. I have no idea how many cars there are on the road in the United States. It must be a lot. But, you know, that kind of gives you some idea that, you know, on an individual basis, it's not huge. But so much of the environmental problems that we have right now are, I mean, it's not any single individual that causes the environmental problems. It's the fact that all of us, just a little bit from all of us, adds up in a hurry here. And I would say that just in general for the environment, it's individual behavior that's going to make the biggest difference over the long run in fixing any of our environmental problems. It's just the ability for any of us to cut down on the bottled water we do, cut down on the amount of water we use in general, cut down on the amount of driving we do, things like that. Those are the things that are going to make the big difference in changing environmental issues. It's not big per person, but everybody kind of has to do their part in order to make it work. So total energy that's used.
Do you have the carbon footprint for making tap water, municipal water?
Well, this is the difference between the two of them. I could dig it up in the article and probably show you, but yeah. So this is the difference between the net overage, I guess, between the two.
Basically, to make the tap water, it's just the electricity to run some pumps and the filtration system.
Yeah, right. And I suppose there's some cost in, you know, depending on how you disinfect it with chlorine or UV radiation or ozonation, there will be some sort of an energy cost in that as well, and in the production of those chemicals. So the amount. So in the U.S., there's about 50 million barrels of oil. That are used every year for the production of the bottles, just for the bottled water that we consume in this country. And the U.S., I think, consumes or uses about a fifth to a quarter of the bottled water in the world is consumed by the United States. So basically multiply that by four-ish. That would give you about the amount of oil that's used every year for producing the bottles that go into bottled water. And just for a reference point, the U.S. consumes about 20 million barrels per day. So about 2.5 days worth of oil is how much we put into making bottled water bottles, or the bottles for bottled water in this country every year. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, a barrel of oil does a lot more than just make the fraction that makes the bottled water. When you take a barrel of oil, you get gasoline through jet fuel to down to the benzene that goes to make the bottled water.
Right, right.
So from one barrel of oil, only a very minute portion of it goes to make bottled water.
Right. Yeah, I have to take a look at the article and see the thing. I mean, I think what they did is just they just scaled this energetically, you know, the amount of energy that it took to produce a bottle, and then they just kind of scaled it appropriately. I don't think they're actually saying that, you know, you're using a fraction of this for the bottle and the rest. There's a scaling factor that goes into this.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other question or thought, comments? Okay.
How does recycling the bottles affect this? What if I used all that, but I actually recycled all my bottles? Does that make me better, or is this more stupid?
Less stupid.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't able to find anything about energetically how much energy you save on the recycling. I mean, so I can't answer you that from an energy standpoint, but I guess what I can make comments on is that currently the recycling is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30%, and that goes up and down depending on the year, depending on what's going on. But about 70% of these bottles that get produced end up in landfills, or littered out in the rivers, the sides of the roads, and things like that. So these bottles, I've seen figures like 1,000 years to degrade. And I'm not even honestly sure what that's based on. I mean, I think at this point, you know, you can pick any number bigger than 500 and it kind of gets to be a little bit irrelevant. So I've seen 500, I've seen 1,000. You know, if you expose it to UV radiation, to the sunlight, it will break down faster. So maybe we really should be throwing these in the side of the road because they'll break down more quickly than if we stick them in a landfill.
Keep in mind also, recycling doesn't mean that it's being reused. They may just burn it.
Yeah.
A lot of that is just, it goes back up in the atmosphere.
Right. So 70% includes both landfills and incineration.
Well, and doesn't a lot of the plastic that's recycled just become different plastic products?
Yeah, you can if you're careful enough. If you're careful enough and get a pure enough amount of the PET. So PET is the most common one for water. At least for the individual, waters, like those two bottles there would both be PET. If you get the bigger ones that you bring into water coolers and work, those are usually HDPE. But these PE bottles here, if you get a pure enough stream of those, they actually will reuse those and make more water bottles out of them. But you're right, one of the misnomers about recycling plastics is that it's not really recycling, it's repurposing, reuse. You know, instead of making bottles out of it, you're making picnic table logs or plastic lumber kinds of things like that too. So it's not truly recycled all the time. A lot of it is just reused. But you can recycle it if you get a pure enough stream of this stuff. So there's the energy cost, there's the CO2 cost, there's the cost of putting these into the landfills, and of course we pay for that out of our garbage. Fees that we pay, that's part of the cost of what we're paying for is the handling all of these bottles that never degrade. And so there's a lot of folks who would like to see bottle bills put in place. When there's bottle bills that are put in place, there's some states where they've gotten up to 95% recycling. And yet, the industry routinely lobbies against having bottle bills for various reasons. I don't know if they just, if I'm not exactly sure what their rationale for it is. If they think that the cost is going to be prohibitive. I mean, you know, is 5 or 10 cents really going to make that big a difference when you're paying $4.50 for a gallon? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what the rationale for it is, but you know, the industry. Wants it to be sort of a voluntary kind of thing. They don't believe in these bottle bills, but on the other hand, the bottle bills work. And so that would be one thing that would be, I think, would make it at least more effective in terms of the recycling, is if we could get comprehensive bottle bills in various places. Yeah?
Can you explain what a bottle bill is?
So you put a 10-cent deposit on the bottle, then you bring the bottle back, you get 10 cents back. And so, like, California's got a bottle bill, and it's kind of a creepy thing the first time you see it, but we put we have curbside recycling, so you put your curbside recycling out there, and then 2-3 in the morning, and don't ask me how I know this, but yeah. People will go up and down the streets and actually dig through recycling containers looking for the bottles that have the bottle deposit on, and they'll go and cash in the money. And so because there's money attached to it, people tend to be a lot more efficient about returning it and getting that money back.
I used to do that as a child, mm-hmm. pick up soda water bottles and cash in those.
Yeah, I mean,
recycle the glass bottle.
Yeah, I can remember that too. With you know, finding a glass bottle that hadn't been turned in, it was just, you know, it was candy money for me. It was a great find. Yeah.
My church recycles like that. We get about $250 a year from people giving what they've used, or if they pick them up on the roadside.
Is this from a bottle bill, or is this just from just bringing in the bulk material?
Aluminum cans, just bring them in. Oh, isn't that what a bottle bill is?
Yeah, I mean, it could be it can be cans, it can be plastic bottles, it can be any of those kinds of things. Yeah, yeah. So bottle bills are an effective way that we could actually do better with the recycling. But of course, it would be better still if folks would think carefully about whether they really need the bottled water or not. I mean, in this country, about 90% of the U.S. population. Spelling population has access to municipal water. So in theory, we could get rid of an awful lot of the bottled water if folks would think very carefully about whether they really need to have the bottled water or not for any particular reason, whether they can plan ahead a little bit more carefully. I mean, there are different places, like the city of San Francisco, the restaurants there will no longer offer bottled water in the restaurants. That's just something that's happened. And there are cities around the country now that have put in place things like that, bottled water bans, where, and there's government agencies around the country who've kind of figured out that that they can save a heck of a lot of money by not allowing bottled water to be purchased anymore with government funds. If people want to bring in their own, that's one thing, but the agencies will no longer pay for it out of government funding. Because they have access to tap water that's just as good and will do the job. And so, you know, that's kind of where we are with the thing. And with bottled water right now is that there is a resistance that's starting to grow up around it, where folks are starting to recognize that it's not necessarily the most environmentally friendly thing to do is to use these bottled water things. Fiji water. They're shipping these from all the way around the world. And so the actual cost, the transportation cost of bringing this bottle of water to Holden is probably 2 to 3 times as much as the actual plastic that went into this particular bottle. In some ways, it's kind of an insane concept to be shipping water halfway around the country in bottles like that, especially when we have access to the water here. What can you tell us about our water here in Holden? Anything in particular?
It's Fiji water.
There's somebody down there right now dumping out bottles of this into the pot.
Copper Glacier natural spring water. No, you listed earlier. We test it. We test it daily for levels of chlorine,
mm-hmm.
and then quarterly for coliform.
Uh huh.
It's better than any bottled water you can buy.
Sure is.
Yeah, no, it seems.
Well, the answer is probably a sin tax, mm-hmm. environmental cost tax, but of course, that probably wouldn't get taxed. But if you made bottled water twice as expensive as it currently is, I suspect fewer people would buy it.
Right. Well, that's probably true. I mean, you know, we certainly got evidence for that for gasoline several years ago when the price went up. I was just amazed at how many fewer cars there were on the freeways around in California. I mean, it was actually almost pleasurable to drive in some ways. You know, people were actually driving the speed limit. There were less cars out on the road. That convinced me more than anything else about the power of economics if you want to push certain kinds of behaviors. Yeah.
Bottled water thing to me speaks to how we react to advertising as human mm-hmm. beings. I mean, it is, when you think about it, it makes no sense rationally to say we spend that much money for water, but yet it's been an amazingly effective advertising profit mm-hmm. argument for all of the companies that sell it. And I continue to marvel at how we as human beings react to advertising.
It's also the most profitable sector for the bottling, for the Coca-Cola.
Oh yeah, well, that's where they make a huge part of their
people profit. Stop buying, you know, kind of topped out on Coca-Cola and then
they went to water.
Well, I mean, you know, you think about it, it's like they don't have to buy the syrup, they don't have to buy the sugar, they don't have to do, I mean, it's like Coke without everything in it, you know, they cut their costs way down and sell it for just as much or more.
And the other side of it is this flavored water now, you get kids growing up that don't like the taste of the tap water because they can get lemon flavored water.
Yeah,
you know, out of the from the cook, and so you know we're culturally or maybe generationally changing our consumption habits.
But in the schools, a lot of times as well, the same schools will outlaw the sodas, but but still have an entire vending machine full of the Coca-Cola bottled water.
So I'm at UC Davis. We bring in more money for environmental research than any university in the country. Cornell is number two. And my department, Land, Air, and Water Resources, has bottled water in the lobbies that they offer. And it just drives me nuts that of all the places that should be taking a stand, my campus should be out front leading the way. And I've been busy trying to get tenure, so I haven't been willing to jump on that wagon quite yet. But you know, it might be time to push the envelope a little bit here and see what we can do on my campus, because it just drives me crazy. So one of the papers that I have in my water quality class write this past year was, you know, the premise for the paper was, the chancellor has put a hypothetical ban on bottled water for our campus here. You know, respond to it. Please write a letter to the chancellor either in favor of it or against this ban on bottled water and give your reasons. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting exercise to read. And I don't know if I was hoping that everybody would support the ban or not. I mean, I think most of them actually did support the ban, but there were still a lot who kind of bought into that same list of things that we had, you know, consumer choice and freedoms and taste and the convenience and things like that. There's generally, I mean, the advertising thing, there are generally a lot of people there who still kind of have this allure to bottled water, that there's something special about it. It's sealed, it must be good. Or we're paying lots of money for it, it must be good. I mean, that's another part of marketing that's just crazy too, the fact that when you pay more money for it, you think it's more special and you almost get sucked into buying it because of the cost.
Berkeley University makes a lot of money by having those vending machines there too.
They probably do.
Yeah, that's another problem.
At one time I worked for the University of Florida in the Environmental Health and Safety Office, and I remember the students called in, they had a meeting, and they brought in the guy who was in charge of waste management. They were demanding a recycling program for the bottled water and all this other stuff. And he looked at him and said, if you want to do a recycling program program, you have to realize they're just going to burn this. The best thing you can do is to stop drinking bottled water.
Yeah.
You know, that goes along with, if you don't, why do recycling? Just stop it. Stop drinking.
Yeah.
Hard to find, there are fewer public drinking fountains in these days.
Well,
yeah.
And that's
hard to find a place to get a drink of water.
And that's a general problem too. And you know, the author of this book, I mean, hits on that topic really hard. That instead of, you know, that there's a whole fundamental issue here. The fact that if we go to bottled water, if we turn it into commodity instead of a human right, we're going down a path that's dangerous. And so one of the author here supports that notion that instead of spending all this money on bottled water, what we really need to be doing is putting money into our municipal water systems to make sure that they're all safe and well functioning, and that we need to bring in more water fountains or hydration stations is another thing where they'll take municipal water and they'll do some sort of filtering on it to make it taste a little bit better if the water really truly is not good tasting from a municipal water supply too. But yeah, I guess that's the other side of it, is that, you know, we can use the stick potentially of higher sin tax, that's from the suggestion here, but also just the carrot of better water, better availability of tap water so that people can use it. There was an example that was given in this book here of a university, a stadium that was built in Florida, and the first game there, the temperatures were up over 100, there was not a single water fountain that was in the entire place. And they ran out of bottled water. They had people who were, you know, critically ill from the heat exhaustion, from heat stroke. They had to, you know, they carry people out of there. And, you know, just because it was not part of the design plan to put in water fountains in this building, because they were going to make all their money off of selling bottled water. One of the concessions then they decided initially was that they're, okay, we'll hand everybody a free bottle of water when they walk in the door. Eventually, the PR got to be so bad that they went ahead and installed like 50 water fountains in this stadium after the fact. But you're right, just the idea that you know, water is a right. It's not something that we should have to pay for, at least not in this country, it seems like. And so there should be a lot more water fountains available to everybody. Yeah.
Well,
So you've convinced me. I'm not going to buy any bottled water, but I still want the convenience of carrying my water around with me.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of container should I put my water into for my tap to take it or I'm with me?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different ones. You know, I probably shouldn't, you know, this since this is over 20 years old, I might not want to know what's leached out of that sucker, but I'm assuming by now that anything bad that's going to leach out of there has. But, you know, there are a lot of different bottled water choices out there. I think the metal ones probably have the best capable, or, you know, are probably the least likely to leach things and probably going to be a little bit more environmentally friendly than doing the plastics. But there are a lot of plastics out there that are safe and they're lighter as well. I mean, I think, you know, buying plastic is not a bad thing as long as if you're planning on using it for 20 some years.
Just not for BPA free.
Yeah. And any more, I think, yeah, BPA free would be, that's the bisphenol A. Yeah, I mean, so around Davis, there's a lot of different, like in our, I coached in a soccer league there, and they've handed out both aluminum and plastic water bottles to everybody in order to try to encourage folks to bring water instead of buying bottled water. So I think either one of them is a good choice as long as you just use it. I don't have anything else here. I guess we got Vespers coming up in 10 minutes too, so if you have any questions, I guess you can flag me down somewhere around.
Thank you.
Hold on. I can't.